It's extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!
Hello Team FD and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast, where today we'll be doing our Euro 2020 preview. But before we get started, this week's episode is sponsored by our friends The Athletic. And if Euro 2020 is the perfect stage for world-class teams, Pat, then The Athletic is the equivalent for world-class writers, Joseph. All beavering away to bring you the best coverage of your club. And it's all completely ad-free, zero aggravation, all football. With our exclusive discount code, theathletic.co.uk/Sunday Vibes, which is all lowercase by the way, you'll get a 30-day free trial and 50% off an annual subscription. All that primo football content for just £2.50 a month. And talking of Prime, I'm joined by two of our very best for this episode.
Hey.
It's Joseph Tomlinson, it's Patrick Van Straten.
Okay, so the way we're looking at Euro 2020 is through the lens of young players. So we're going to split it into three sections. First of all, we've all picked somebody who could be the breakout star of the tournament. Then we've picked a player who shouldn't go, but probably will. And finally, there's a wild card, a player who is unlikely to make the cut for their nation, but deserves a shot at the tournament. And I'm going to start with my breakout star. And I've gone full George Wright. I've picked an Arsenal player. I've picked Matteo Guendouzi.
Man who's not going to get a minute at
almost certainly will not be a starter for France at the Euros. He's just got his first call up to the French national team. Hilariously, they told him to go home from the under-21s.
Yeah.
And he was fearful that he'd been dropped, but it was actually just Paul Pogba's injury giving him an upgrade.
What, they gave him no context, sending him home?
Yeah, they were just like, you need to pack your bags. And he was like, oh, what am I going to home? Who? And then they were like, you're going to be with the senior team. And he was like, oh! Anyway, now
and
he's
Jeremy
with the senior
Beadle
team.
Jeremy Beadle popped out.
What, the guy with his little arm?
Yeah. Oh, R.I.P.
Classic. Like Dumbledore, also withered arm. But no less of a legend. anyway, yeah, with France's midfield, I think it's likely that he will get sub 4 minutes the Euros. But yeah. I think he does maybe deserve a run out because he's slightly different from some of their other players. So they've got Pogba, Kante, Ndombele, Aouar and Tolisso in midfield, it's which not is not bad. A bad compliment. And then they've got a bunch of kind of older, I guess, utility men in Matuidi, Sissoko, those kind of guys who I would not take to the tournament.
But the manager loves.
And yeah. Nzonzi.
Yeah, well, this is the... Yeah, Nzonzi as well. He's still getting called
He's
up.
In the current squad.
This is the issue. Deschamps is fundamentally conservative, both in his style of play and in his squad selections. He's generally been opposed to change, continues to call up Giroud, despite the fact that Giroud is knocking on the door of 34 now. And obviously Matuidi's still in the squad as well, despite kind of diminishing returns with him. But it's interesting that he gave Guendouzi a call up for those September internationals, because there are plenty of guys he could have gone for. So it's kind of nice that he's shown a little bit of faith in him. And I think he probably deserves it after his start to the season. He's missed just 4 minutes of action so far. He's been preferred to Xhaka, Torreira, Ceballos. He's been preferred to all of those at some point. And I think that's pretty fair enough. Like, he's been Arsenal's best midfielder to date, mostly because Ceballos hasn't played every minute.
He's Unai's go-to man in central midfield, in my opinion. Like, I think he's one of the first names on Unai's team sheet every single week.
Yeah, well, he can do a bit of everything. Like, I don't think he's as good at that as Ceballos, but also from the long-term point of view,
you're going
to
lose him.
We're going to lose Ceballos, so it makes more sense to invest that time in Guendouzi.
Definitely.
Is Guendouzi part of the reason why Torreira's kind of playing box-to-box? Because I had a look at Guendouzi's numbers this morning, and it was like 5 defensive actions up from like 3 last season. Like really, really good pass and 90% pass accuracy, 60-odd passes a game. Is he now taking over defensive duties from everyone?
I think the reason Torreira is being pushed forward is because Unai Emery doesn't know that he's a defensive midfielder. But Guendouzi has been a much more responsible defender this season. You're right. Like, close to 5 tackles and interceptions per game. If you possession adjust that, it goes up to about 6.
Nice.
Which is pretty good stuff. Obviously got 2,100 minutes last season as a 19-year-old in the Premier League, which for a club who ultimately very narrowly missed out on a top 4 place is pretty impressive, really.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that was like, kind of levelled at him last season was, at moments, a slight lack of concentration.
Oh, yeah.
Positionally, especially, I remember quite a few times where he gave the ball away in a silly area or went charging out a silly area and it ended up costing you.
Whereas Xhaka was pulling him about the pitch.
Yeah, I think this season he looks a little bit more disciplined just from the opening four games.
Well, you'd hope so, but I also assume some of that will still happen. Like, he's so, young, and no midfielder is kind of perfect, but I expect that he will still make some silly mistakes this season because often he is asked to pretty much deal with the first phase of play himself. We hope that will happen a bit less with Luiz's passing out of the back and more progressive fullbacks once Tierney's back in. But quite often he is just given the ball facing his own goal and asked to deal with the first wave of pressure. So I would expect that he's going to look silly at stages this season.
Seems to relish it though, doesn't he? Like in the North London derby, he was one of the reasons you came back into the game.
Yeah, and he wants to be on the ball all the time. Last season when we lost at the Emirates to City, no, when we lost away to City, he was by far our best player and actually was arguably the dominant midfielder on the pitch, like just skipping past challenges and really wanted the ball when the rest of the team was kind of like getting overrun in every single area. So that's kind of nice. And he completes a dribble a game with a 66% success rate, which is pretty good for a young player. And I think he's going to fill out a lot physically.
So do I.
Like He's 6'1", but he's 64 kilos.
Still
that's
right.
That's the same weight as Lucas Torreira. Lucas Torreira's 5'5".
64 kilos, that's so...
We're talking George Wright territory.
Think how skinny...
That's skinnier than George Wright.
It's so little. So when you think how much he's got to fill out, I genuinely think that he could turn into pretty much a battleship.
Maybe the Arsenal physios are failing him. Like
that's
Sam
actually
Sam
crazy. 64 kilos.
Well, he's just going to beef up. You'd expect, like, between the ages of like 19 and 22, you'd expect people to put on an awful lot of muscle mass.
Yeah.
Specifically, lower muscle mass.
We saw it with that Rashford, didn't we? He was so rangy to start with.
Yeah, and then suddenly just like explodes. Wiry, and like, I think that Guendouzi is one of those guys who, up until last season, had clearly got by at every level on the fact that he was just more athletic than people of his same age. Like, that's normally the case, I think, with young footballers. They've just always been the most technically talented, well, one of the more technically talented and certainly the most physically talented among people their age. And Guendouzi is now at a point where that's no longer the case. But I think it probably could be the case again in the future. Like, if he beefs up over the next couple of years, I think he probably could be one of the more robust Premier League midfielders.
So where do you see him playing? Do you think he's better as a DM or a box-to-box? Because whenever I've watched him, I think he's actually a little bit better roaming around.
I would like him to roam around, but in a way, I think box-to-box is a little bit more aggressive than he'll end up being.
Like against Tottenham, I wouldn't have described his performance as an out-and-out DM. Like, there were moments where he was in the box and he was getting off shots. He was unlucky not to score a really good save down low to his left by Lloris. So I think he's actually a little bit better when he's not as super disciplined, when he doesn't have to just sit in front of a back four.
I think he's just a central midfielder. That is how I describe him. I don't really want him getting to the edge of the box that often. But I do want him to have more freedom than to be the six. Like, in my view, if you were playing a three-man midfield for Arsenal, you would expect Torreira to be the deepest player, right? The actual DM. Guendouzi to be the guy next to him who's playing like as a pure central midfielder and the distributor out of the two. And then Ceballos is the guy who's going to get forward a little bit more. Or Joe Willock or whoever it might be. It doesn't matter. So to me, he's like a classic central midfielder. Like, in the mode, like, if you think that like Xavi, for instance, was not a DM and he was not a box-to-box midfielder. He was just a central midfielder. And I think that that's probably the position that you'd want. That's like the best possible version, you know, of the category that Guendouzi's in.
Do you think he breaks into that France midfield as a defensive midfielder more so than anything else, though? Like, with Kante, you know, potentially playing that kind of more box-to-box role, you've got Nzonzi still starting games. I suppose that Ndombele is the more progressive midfielder, or Pogba as kind of any of them. So maybe if he is to get minutes, it might be at the base.
I think it might well be. Like, because Kante is now in his late 20s and you don't expect his energy in midfield, which is a large part of his game, to last forever. Plus, he's actually not a conventional holding player, Kante. Like, when you think about it, he's always kind of like bombing around the pitch and pretty much plays wherever he wants. He's a defensive midfielder rather than a holding midfielder.
Yeah.
You know, he's got license to press and
get
forward.
And he's always played alongside someone that sits deeper than him, whether it's Matic or Danny Drinkwater at Leicester. Like, he's very
defensively minded central midfielder.
Yeah, he's been very rarely the deepest of the two. Drinkwater, Jorginho.
He doesn't start the play, does he? Whereas Guendouzi can.
Yeah, he's much more akin to Nzonzi in that way, Guendouzi. So, like, when you look at those names that I read out, Pogba, Conte, Ndombele, Ndombele, Aouar and Tolisso, there's nobody there who's actually the same model of player as Guendouzi, I think. So I do think that there's a home for him in that side. He'd be competing with guys like Toussaint, I think. But yeah, in the long run, he's going to be a guy who makes his contribution in distribution and defence rather than in attack. So I think there's a really bright future for him. I think he should probably go to the tournament just to have a different profile in the centre of the park, especially when you're playing smaller teams. Like if I were France, I would probably not run out the conservative lineup against a small team. I would say, okay, we're going to put Guendouzi at the base with Kante alongside him, which will be totally defensively fine. Play Pogba in front of them, and then you've got impact subs. You know, you've got Aouar and Ndombele, you've got Tolisso, and then just run out a three-man attack. Like that I think is probably the best way for now. But it might be, we might be a couple of years away from that. But I certainly expect that, barring a horrific injury or total stagnation, that he would probably be a regular by the time of the World Cup, if not the Euros.
2022, when he'll be like 23, right? 24.
Yeah, he'll be. Yeah, he just turned 20.
He'll have just joined Barcelona or Real Madrid at that stage.
He'll have just joined PSG.
Yeah,
PSG will offer us 70 mil for him in a couple of years' time.
Quite possibly. When
there were rumours of it in January.
Yeah, it fell off, didn't
there? Yeah, there were rumours of it in January that PSG were going to come in for about 70 mil.
How much did you pay for it?
Seven.
Not a bad bit of from identification there. Was that a Sven move?
That was a big Sven move, supposedly.
What was a Sven move?
Is he Sven's legacy?
Well, I mean, Sven's legacy is also us trying to deal with Mkhitaryan's endless contract for £1 billion a week. So Sven has many legacies at Arsenal, and not all of them are good.
That's right, mate. The recruitment department of Roma have just been hoovering everybody that nobody wants.
No, man. They're just like...
We'll take Smalling. Yeah, definitely.
They're like one of those sharks that just like goes on the bottom of the sea, like eating everything. Everything's shit.
Seriously.
They're QPR. When QPR came up to the Premier League, like, got a problem, we'll inherit it.
They're Chelsea.
Yeah.
They're Chelsea.
Right, should we stick in France then? And I'll come in with my option. Stick in France.
You could do this
the
whole
national team.
You could do this whole thing just with French players. Like every
really
player
could.
I was thinking of, I was just like French.
Because the strength and depth is just
insane. My wild cards are Frenchy as well.
It's obscene.
I also took a look at the German squad to see if there's any obvious.
What nationalities do you have? What are your three nationalities?
I've gone for, they're quite out there.
Okay.
So I've gone for Kosovan.
Interesting.
And then my second player, I mean, is someone you've just alluded to, but I won't kind of ruin the section. Or bring up his name now. And the third one is Norwegian. So two teams that might not qualify.
Right,
but Kosovo are guaranteed a place in the playoffs through the UEFA Nations League, hence why I picked them. And so, I kind of just wanted to do some reading about Kosovo.
Yeah.
I ended up doing...
We're playing them this weekend, aren't we?
I mean, they're in our group, yes.
Is it Rita Ora?
Yeah.
Well, I ended up just
who
doing
could
like,
star for Kosovo.
I ended up just kind of reading about the civil war in like 98, 99. Like a lot of my research, or the time I dedicated towards this, went on non-footballing matters.
Interesting.
But let me come in with Arbe Zanelli of Reims. That's the only French connection, and that's where it stops. Obviously, he represents Kosovo, who have been, you know, coined the Brazil of the Balkans because they've been playing such bloody good football.
England rinsed them on the weekend 5-0.
They went.
Who was christening them that?
They went people.
Other Kosovans.
They went unbeaten in 2018. Patrick, put a bit of respect on their name.
How many games did they play?
Not quite sure.
Six, and about all of them against Bulgaria.
Well, you know, actually, we'll revisit their UEFA Nations League campaign because there's some very credible draws in there as well, I'll have you know. But they only had 12 players in 2016 and a national stadium that was deemed not fit for purpose. So the fact that they're on the cusp of qualifying for a major tournament is not to be scoffed at. I mean, I've got down here, they declared their independence from Serbia in 2008. This is really where I go off at a tangent and start bringing politics into this.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to resist.
You're going to give us some facts.
I'm going to resist that. Now,
do you know what the capital of Kosovo is, Joe?
Kosovo City.
No. It's Pristina. Hey.
Yeah?
Good trivia.
Good for a stag do? Or?
I wouldn't know.
Okay. Well, maybe our fans can let us know that in the comments section, which doesn't exist. Only recognised by UEFA in 2016. And in that same year, only won 1 point in World Cup qualification, which was a draw against Finland. So this section isn't just a breakout player, gentlemen, in Zanelli. It's a bloody breakout country. I've gone for it. Yeah, like I said, they're assured of at least a playoff place in Euro 2020 by virtue of topping Group 3, in the UEFA Nations League. They're actually top goal scorers in the competition with 15 goals, despite drawing against Azerbaijan in their opening game. That wasn't to be repeated, Joe, because they smacked them 4-0 away from home, and Zanelli scored a hat-trick against them, which meant they ultimately got 14 points from six matches. So this is the sort of form, Patrick, that gets you to Monaco, the Brazil of the Balkans, all right?
14 points from six matches is a good return.
And we need to, who we else need to is respect in the group?
I mean, Azerbaijan.
They're currently, yeah, I mean, there's like Gibraltar.
Cool.
I mean,
like San Marino.
Cool. Vatican City.
There were some other minnows in there, admittedly. But in
Scotland.
Their results so far in England's group haven't been, you know, all that bad. So they've got 5 points, I think. They're 1 point behind the Czech Republic, who have six. That would make sense, wouldn't it? So they're currently third and likely to qualify from that group if the Czech Republic, you know, just sort of pick up a little bit of form. But it's an outside chance. But, you know, if they don't, like I said, they can get through the back door. And this campaign has included like credible draws with Denmark and Montenegro, as well as a victory away from Bulgaria, which you sort of poo-pooed a minute ago, Joe. But, you know, Bulgaria are all right, aren't they? All right.
Are they since still Berbatov all right? Left?
I still imagine
that. Because all the sons of the team that got to World Cup final are now 20.
Martin Petrov, Stylian Petrov.
Not sure, but England are playing them this weekend as well, on Monday.
Who's a prominent
Tuesday.
Bulgarian player now?
Now?
Christ.
Okay. Berbatov's still running out from probably.
Maybe the 3-2 victory wasn't all that. But more about the player, because he's a pretty interesting fella. So grew up in Sweden to Albanian parents, hence the link to Kosovo. Actually made 35 appearances for Sweden at under 17, 19 and 21 level. So it's a little bit unexpected, I guess, if you're part of that setup, for him to kind of swear his allegiance to Kosovo. Came for Elfsborg. Sold to Heerenveen, did very well in the Eredivisie, playing on the left-hand side before being picked up by Reims in January 2019 for 3.75. I think there was a contract dispute in there somewhere where his contract was coming to an end, hence why they paid a little, quite a modest fee for him. 18 goal involvements in total in 18-19, and his numbers have increased year on year for the past
in
four
Liga.
Seasons. So half of them... Eredivisie, half Liga, and pretty much a pretty even split. Actually, I think six might have been in Liga. But his goal involvements the past 4 years have been 4, 19, and 13. And he's still relatively young, so just turned 24 in February. Already been seasons in his career, I think it might have been 17, 18, where he's averaging over three shots in the Eredivisie. They've now plateaued like somewhere between 2.5 and 3. I mean, it's in Liga, and that's still relatively impressive, considering that Reims were quite a limited side last year. I think fourth worst for shot generation, third worst for chance creation. So yeah, he was very useful when he came in for them. And two key passes a game, 2.4 dribbles a game in 18-19. Like, this guy looks like a very, very useful player out on the left. And his expected goals and assists are actually 0.56 per game, which is much better than Saint-Maximin's. I think his was around 0.32, and he got that big money move to Newcastle, didn't he? So yeah, I think Reims ultimately finished 8th, despite expected points putting them closer down to 12 because of the decisiveness of players like Zanelli. I only watched kind of highlight reels of him this morning. I mean, looks pretty much, like I said, a very useful creator. But just wanted to look a little bit further afield. And I opted for him and learn about Kosovo in the process, mate. So
we'll get to see him this weekend against England. Probably the toughest test they'll face in the Euro 2020, given how good our current crop of youngsters is and squad, and it's a very young squad, isn't it? So
he most certainly is, and they've been solid, so I think it'll probably be a little bit harder than England fans maybe expect him.
Well, hopefully not. I'd like to see England actually turn him over this weekend. Should we go on to mine, seeing as we have got an Englishman?
Talking of England,
seeing as well, we've got an Englishman. I've put mine down as Mason Mount.
Mental.
Pato, not the biggest fan here.
Mental. Absolutely mental.
But I think he will go to the tournament.
He won't
probably
start,
won't be a starter necessarily, given some of the quality in the similar role to him. But I think I'd be very surprised if he doesn't go. I think he's probably going to play 95% of the minutes Chelsea have to offer this season.
Yeah.
And because of that, it will be enough to get him on the plane ahead of some other names that I'm still not sure will play all those minutes. Obviously, he's playing as both an attacking mid, a centre mid, and kind of a left winger so far for Chelsea this season. He's played every minute of every game, of course, under Frank Lampard. And he played a hell of a lot of minutes as well last season when he played for Frankie Lamps at Derby, picking up 9 goals, pretty much par for his XG as well. So it's not like he was getting lucky, which is a pretty good return for a 19-year-old in the Championship. Not incredible, but it's fine. The year before that, of course, picked up Vitesse's Player of the Year and was in the Eredivisie Team of the Season. So he's got form for progressing throughout his career. And I think so far this season, he's taken a bit of a step forward again from Derby. He's not anywhere near the finished article, but I like how he's adaptable. And I think that's probably why England will take him. The ability to play on the left, the ability to play a little bit deeper and as an AM. I think he's putting up 3.5 tackles and interceptions, 2 key passes. He's got 2 goals so far this season. And I think where you'll see James Maddison start for England, because I think he's a better footballer right now.
Yeah.
I think you'll probably see James Maddison in a midfield with maybe Winks and Rice, or against a slightly bigger team, or Henderson. I think you'll probably be England's midfield three, and then you'll see us. We've got so much talent going forward that I think we may struggle to pick an out and out front three that plays every week. I'm thinking Kane, Dele, Rashford, and Sancho. Don't think you're going to fit all four into the same side unless you play a 4-2-3-1. And oh shit, I completely forgot about Raheem Sterling and Raheem Sterling, who's nailed on starter. So I think you'll probably see like a 4-3-3, and you'll probably see Sterling, Kane, Sancho would be my would what I'd predict to be our starting front three.
You know, with Southgate telling Kyle Walker that you're still my number one, but you're not in this squad, it does feel like he's thinking about moving away from that three at the back with Kyle Walker as the outside centre half.
Yeah, well, he hasn't played three at the back really for a while,
since
has
the World
he?
Cup.
Yeah, so I think you'll see a 4-3-3.
So yeah,
and then Mount, I think, stands a chance of getting in there. I genuinely think Mason Mount stands a chance of getting in there, but it's going to be between him and Maddison. The thing he has, I think...
And Ali.
I think Ali's going to play as one of the three, though, going forward. I think he'll probably be rotated.
On one of the sides?
I don't think he'll be played as a central midfielder.
But if you're playing like a 4-2-3-1, which is what Mount has played basically all his professional football in, like, then I think in that hole behind the striker, you'd expect it to be Maddison or Ali.
But he's kind of playing in a 4-3-3 now at Chelsea.
Kind of, but it's kind of a 4-2-3-1 as well, like, which is why there's this idea of, is he playing on the left, is he playing through the center, like, it's a bit of both. Also I guess my issue is that, like, when you have an attacking midfielder, like, whether they're playing on the left or through the center, like, you expect that person to be on the ball all the time, and if I'm looking at that England team, then he's the last guy I want on the ball when my other options are like Sterling, Sancho, Maddison, Ali. I want those guys with the ball. I don't want Mount getting on it, because he's going to waste it by shooting.
I don't know. I think I want Mount on the ball. Like, from when I've watched him this season...
More than those guys?
Not necessarily more than those guys, but those guys are a lot older than him and have Madison's progressed. Like,
Maddison also plays in that kind Sancho's of hybrid 4-3-3 and 4-2-3.
Yeah, but Sancho's playing on the right, isn't he?
Sure, but my point is...
Mount's not
picking the ball out there. Your primary creator can still be like... It's still about like how much they get the ball. So like, you look at Coutinho at Barcelona. Coutinho's not a bad player, and he's still playing in his preferred position a lot of the time, but he doesn't have the ball as much because Messi has the ball all the time.
Yeah, of course.
And so if Mount's demanding the ball, then I think, well, this is less time for Ali, less time for Sterling, less time for Sancho, and I'd much rather those guys had it.
Yeah, but he's not a ball hog, I would say, Mason Mount.
I feel like all attacking midfielders to some extent are ball hogs. I'm not saying he's like a selfish player. I'm saying that like the guy in that position,
I just think that's
has
why
the ball.
I think it's harsh to classify Mason Mount as like an attacking midfielder, like out and out though. Like, he's been playing this season like in behind Barkley.
But his shots per, he's still taking like 3.5 shots per 90, which would suggest when he gets the ball.
Yeah. He's progressive, but that is probably because he's drifting wide as well into the left wing role when Pulisic played on the right last weekend.
And Pulisic doesn't like to shoot. He likes to dribble and he likes to set someone else up for a shot.
Yeah.
Which is kind of why maybe his numbers have spiked a little bit playing through the centre next to someone.
But
he took a lot of shots last season as well.
From outside the box.
Yeah. Two-thirds of his shots are from outside the box. And that's why his XG per shot is like 0.07. And like the average is like, what, 0.1? And you look at that and you think, there are times, don't get me wrong, he's got his 2 goals this season and they've been good. They've been well taken.
Yeah.
But I also look at them and I think, how many promising attacks did I feel like he wasted because he shot when he shouldn't have? And actually, it's quite a few. Like, I would rather that he was creating. Whereas, you know, Maddison has the same number of goal involvements.
At Derby, I kind of feel like that's because he's like trying to show off a bit.
Sure.
And I think with England, he wouldn't be the big man. I'm not saying
but
he would start in this
big
team,
man, but he's doing that at Chelsea.
Like,
as well.
For me, he's like a Maddison backup in this team. Because I think you look at the other options and they're all quite defensive. It's like, other than Barkley And I would definitely rather take Mason Mount than Barkley to Euro 2020.
Agreed.
Your other options are sort of Rice, Winks, Hendo,
Oxlade-Chamberlain,
who has got to start playing some football to get to get there.
Well, if he's the only fit, reason he'll be really squad. Useful for England, actually.
You know, at this point, who do you guys, if say you do play a 4-2-3-1, who do you guys rather have at 10, Maddison or Dele Alli?
I just don't think Southgate sees Dele Alli as a 10.
I'd play him in the midfield, actually.
I think he sees Dele Alli as a sort of impact sub coming on Southgate, and I think Maddison will probably get minutes there at Euro 2020. But right now, it's going to be Dele Alli, because Maddison, this is his...
Okay.
What is this, his second squad? I think this is his first cap.
The thing is, though, Alli was doing more central midfield stuff last year than in any previous season. And there's the part of me that would be like, play an out-and-out DM next to him, play like Rice next to Alli, play Maddison in front of them, who will also chip in defensively, and then play Sterling, Kane, Sancho.
And win every game 5-4.
Yeah, well, no, I genuinely think that team would be absolutely fine defensively. Like, Rice does a lot of defensive work.
But Dele plays so high for Spurs, doesn't he?
But he doesn't have to. Last season, he didn't play that high, like, but he got injured a lot. Like, and also, your defensive line is way better than it was at the World Cup, I think, because you've got Chilwell. You've got a proper left back. You've got proper right back.
Do you then lose some of, like, Ali's kind of brilliant kind of pressing in the final third?
Not necessarily. You didn't lose it last season. Like, last season,
His defensive numbers were great, weren't they? Pressures, but weren't they all in the final third?
No, but last season, he was doing, like, tons and tons of build-up play as well in the centre of the park and a lot of defensive work. Like, so he's capable of doing it all. But I think that's just, like, I don't know, it's hard to kind of come up with a plan that will just work for any game, right, these days.
Like, Very tough.
Nobody has a first-choice 11 for every game unless they're quite old-fashioned.
Like, in the DM slot, like, I think Henderson will play minutes, but I think Winks will probably be his like, starting six.
I do actually worry that Winks is going to start.
I love Winks. So, me and you have different opinions on Winks.
I don't think he's great. I think he's all right. Like, he's a decent
It's definitely our weakest area.
He's a decent passer. He can't defend particularly well. Like, he's not particularly press resistant. He's a little bit, like, he's not creative. I just think, like, it's more that I just think, how do you get the maximum amount of talent on the field? And the best way to do it is probably to play a proper DM next to one of your better midfielders. And in this case, that means Rice, maybe with a midfield three of, like, if the Ox is fit, like, the Ox would be quite good there, actually. Like, Rice and the Ox and somebody else. You know, whether that's Madison, whether it's Alli.
I think you'll probably see, like, a midfield of Winks, Rice, Winks, Henderson, and Madison for most of the tournament. Jesus. Something like that.
Or do you think Rice, he likes Henderson. Madison that much? Because is this Madison's first call up?
This is his second call up, but it'll be his first cap.
Right, okay.
But equally, I don't think he's had the opportunity to really call him up in the same way that Dele's been injured, so he's been filled that role with Dele, hasn't he? So whether or not Dele plays a full season as well, let's not forget at the moment he can't get in the Tottenham team. I imagine he will when he's back fully fit, but it's a bloody hard team to get into, that Tottenham team, and play a hell of a lot of minutes this season. That front line is just incredible.
That's true. My other issue with Winks is that Winks' main thing is that he's a volume passer from the base of midfield, like a big distributor from the base of midfield. When you've got Alexander-Arnold at right back and Maguire at centre back and Stones at centre back, you've got so much passing out of your back line that I think what I want from that midfielder is not the distribution, it's the defence.
Yeah, to slide into a back three when one of those fullbacks goes bombing on, sort of thing.
Well, not necessarily, but like Rice could probably do that, yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But I would still take Mount. I think Mount will go, and I think he will have a bit of a bigger impact than people give him credit for. I also think, like, I was reading an article in The Athletic this week by Liam Toomey, and I didn't realise that Mount and Rice are actually, like, properly best mates. Declan Rice got released by Chelsea when he was 14, 15.
All right.
Like, so he only joined West Ham late, but those two came through the academy from the age of, like, six, so they are, like, properly best mates. So I think with Rice as a starter, I quite like to see Mount alongside him in these qualifiers against Kosovo and Bulgaria, because I think Southgate's made the right decision leaving players like Walker at home because he's seen enough of him. Now is the time to start these boys, and if he goes for a midfield three of Mount, Maddison and Rice against Kosovo, I think that's quite exciting.
It's quite attacking.
Yeah, like I say, now is the time for Mount to impress, because I feel like if Chelsea continue to struggle, his role might change a little bit. I don't know. Will he continue to get as many minutes, you know, when if they revert to like a 4-3-3?
I think it'll be Barkley that gets sacrificed. Like, who knows? Ahead of Mount.
It's just, yeah,
I agree.
In order to make room for Kovacic, I think it will be Barkley that gets sacrificed, and then Mount even moves onto a wide position or plays as like a floating 10.
And you say revert, but like they've never played anything else. They've never, like it seems like Frank has basically played a 4-2-3-1, some version of it, like however loose, like for his entire managerial career so far, right? So like,
so revert to a 4-3-3 from the 4-2-3-1 they're currently playing.
Yeah, but they never were in a 4-3-3. That's what I'm saying.
So Chelsea under Sarri. Okay, right. Okay.
Like, but I mean, like I don't know. Like, it's, yeah, I suppose if they decided to kind of go back to the Sarri thing, like maybe that would kind of make sense.
Because I just feel like
he's your passing hub, like Hazard was if he plays.
And also, I think obviously Pulisic played on the right on the weekend, but I'm not sure whether Frank knows whether he's better on the right or the left yet.
Sure.
And I think that whilst he's experimenting with which side Pulisic is available on, Mount offers the ability to play kind of all the way across there. So that's probably the reason he's doing that rather than giving minutes to Pedro and Willian. But yeah, I think Mount will go to the Euros. I don't think he's going to be a starter by any means, but I think he'll have a good impact for England.
So do you see him as like basically the new version of like Jesse Lingard? He's going to be your guy who comes on, he can buzz around, do a lot of defending, contribute to attack.
Like Jesse will probably go because he's a good forward option that can play on the right or the left, isn't he? And can play at 10. And how many do you take? 22 to the Euros?
It's like 22, 23.
23? Like, and if you take five or six forwards, I think he'll probably be one of them just now with Sancho, Sterling, Rashford, Kane. I think you've got Wilson.
Could be Tammy, could be anyone.
I think Tammy missed out on the under 21. I saw a lot of people kicking up a fuss about him not going to the under 21s, but he is actually eligible. He can't go to the under 21s. He's past the cutoff now. The 21 qualifiers or friendlies they're playing at the moment, so he's actually not allowed to go. That's the reason he's not with the 21s, but he didn't get a call up to the first team.
Okay,
I went with Wilson instead, which I think he's like a toss of a coin, isn't it? Neither of them going to start as third choice striker territory behind Rashford and Kane, isn't it? Anyway, what are we moving on to now?
I think it shouldn't go, but will. Is it Ivan Strats?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I've got Manuel Neuer here.
Shouldn't go at all? Or just shouldn't start?
If you're not going to start him, I'm not that sure why you take him.
Leadership.
I take a youngster. But you could take, for instance, Ter Stegen. Like this time around, it's Neuer, Ter Stegen, and Leno, right? So you could take Ter Stegen, Leno, and then like Neuber, right, out of Schalke, who's like incredibly young and looks like a really hot prospect at goalkeeper. In a way that would make a little bit more sense to me, because Neuer was really, really bad last year, and it went kind of under. I know we talked about it, but it went kind of under the radar how bad he was. Like he was like not just not the great goalkeeper of the past, he was one of the worst keepers in the Bundesliga last season. He was genuinely dreadful. Like, across Europe's top five leagues last year, only Man City conceded fewer shots per game than Bayern. Bayern conceded 7.6 shots per game. They allowed 0.81 XG per 90 minutes, which was just a bit above Liverpool's 0.77, better than Juve, better than PSG, better than all the Spanish teams, every team in Spain. But 11 clubs conceded fewer actual goals per game across Europe, even when you allow for the fact that Germany has a shorter season. And the difference is Manuel Neuer. That is the difference. Like, they had an expected goals against total of 27. They allowed 32. 5 goals over the course of a 34-game season is a lot. And, you know, the previous year they let in 28, despite the fact that they had to sack Carlo Ancelotti after 6 weeks because everything was going to shit. I mean, it just seems like he's not helped by the fact that Ulreich had a really good season when he was out. Like, he was out with a foot fracture. Ulreich came in, was Bayern's player of the season, genuinely was really, really good, kept 12 clean sheets in 29 games, I think, was pretty solid. And last season, I know that I've talked shit about it in the past. Like, you know who scored have their rating for players. Like, which you're kind of like, what does it mean? It's just a number. But I looked at last season and Neuer was rated 20th out of 24. The guys beneath him played a combined like 400 minutes. Ulreich was above him. I don't think he's got it anymore.
Injuries have caught him. Injuries have fully caught up with Manuel.
And he's
Neuer.
The age when everyone goes as well. He's the age when...
How old is he now?
I think he's 32, 33, I think.
If he wasn't to go, would there be
national outcry?
Would that be the narrative? would that be something that would distract the squad? Is he going to go and genuinely compete, or is he going to go and he will expect the number one shirt? Like, what's qualifying?
Ter Stegen has to get the one shirt.
Yes. Ter Stegen is clearly one of the best three or four goalkeepers in the world.
Probably the best.
Like, he's up. If you were making any list of the best goalkeepers in the world, the top three would look like the top four or five, let's say, would be like Edison, Alisson, De Gea, Oblak, and Ter Stegen.
Yeah,
those to me are like the clear exactly. top few. And Neuer isn't even in the top 20 anymore. Like, even with his ability at his feet, because he's not a reliable shot stopper. And fundamentally, is it good that he can play with his feet? Sure, though all German keepers can kind of do that.
And Alisson and Edison are better at it than he is.
Well, also, and even the German keepers are, like Ter Stegen clearly is, but Leno is better at it. Like, right now, the last season, like, now, do I think Leno's a particularly reliable presence going forward? No. My idea is I'd probably play Ter Stegen until Nübel's old enough, and then I'd play Nübel. Or play Ter Stegen rather until he's kind of retirement age.
He's still quite young, Ter Stegen, isn't he?
He's not that old, but I think he's like 28, maybe 27, okay. 28. So, like, yeah, he's got a long time left.
The hair age.
Like, so I just think, I don't know, this is the end for Neuer, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think he adds an awful lot to that squad. Even his, like, quote-unquote leadership, I don't think is a massive factor. Like, there are a lot of guys in there who have been playing a lot of football at the international level since they were very young. And I don't know, it just seems like a wasted spot to me. And fundamentally, you've got to think about opportunity cost as well. It's not like, we've got a spare place, we may as well take this guy. It's, who are we not taking if we're taking Neuer? And in this case, it's a youngster who might deserve the minutes. Or even if you really wanted to take a gamble, you could just take two keepers and, like, go absolutely wild, take another forward, which I think is probably not done enough. So, yeah, I don't know. Manuel Neuer, to me, deserves to lose his spot.
Yeah, he's been there for a long time as well, Neuer. It feels like it's time for Ter Stegen, doesn't it?
Time to pass the baton on.
Yeah.
I'll keep mine painfully short because I actually already discussed him. It's Steven Nzonzi. I put Nzonzi / Giroud. I look at the German squad, I look at the England squad. I knew you were doing England. The Germany squad looks quite fresh. Maybe that is just one of the reasons that he's still sneaking in based on tournament experience. Again, hard to quantify. But these two players stood out in sort of the top nations for reasons aforementioned. The age, what, Steven Nzonzi is now 30, 31. Giroud is now 33, 34.
I think so.
And after one season at Roma, he's been, Steven Nzonzi, this is, deemed surplus to requirements, despite costing Giallorossi like £23 million. So 29 starts later, he's gone to Turkey, which is, you know, Europe's equivalent of China, isn't it? It's just a retirement, a very, very expensive retirement home. When was it? Maybe I'm doing a disservice. When was the last? Cengiz Under? Last what, sensational young talents come out of Turkey?
There's Demiral, who Juventus bought.
First Turkish player to play for Juventus.
Did they end up selling him to Milan?
I'm not sure. That is really weird, though, isn't it? That's like proper Serie A transfer. Anyway, shout out Turkey. Very dismissive there, but I'm going to roll with it. So, yeah, I'd rather trust Guendouzi in that role or give Guendouzi any of those minutes that Steven Nzonzi might stake claim to. Ben Yedder also playing up front. I kind of preferred France's, almost preferred their 4-4-2 over their 4-3-3 that they deployed sort of qualifiers, you know, they played a 4-4-2 against Bolivia in a friendly. They kind of played 4-3 in the qualifiers, and it was like Paul Pogba and Ndombele. I think it might have even been Griezmann out on the right, Tamar Lamar out on the left, and a four across midfield. And I thought that's almost like a 4-2-2-2, isn't it? Does that make sense? I don't know this point. So I thought that looked a little bit more exciting, and that felt like one of the riskier formations that Deschamps has played. As well, if you're going to have like a Giroud or a Ben Yedder, it means Mbappe's definitely playing out wide, and I would quite like to see him play down the middle at national level because he's obviously kind of starved of that space at PSG, you know, despite the forward three being obviously very fluid. So, Steven Nzonzi. I won't talk about him anymore. My wild card's a little bit long.
I don't know. It is an interesting thing, though, with France, because what's made them good now has been a generation of quality players combining with a generation of young guys coming in. But what could hold them back going forward is if Deschamps is too attached to the old guys. And when you look at the people who aren't going to go, like Kondogbia is not going to get a look in. Bakayoko is probably not going to get a look in. Mikael Cuisance might at the end of this year, having gone to Bayern Munich, like that might be enough to get him in the squad.
How often does Tolisso play?
Well, he's only just come back from injury, right? He's out of the hole of last season.
That ACL
but
was bad.
If he's fit, he'll play a lot. But you look at, I'd much rather give that place to someone like Cuisance, I think.
Fair enough. Nice. Okay, so I'll keep my older players brief. These are players that are going to make the squad, 100%, but I think they should start to be moved on. It's Bonucci / Chiellini.
Chiellini's pretty much moved himself on, hasn't he, with that injury?
Yeah, he has. But Bonucci continues a slide, a downward trending slide that we've seen over the last few years. Was particularly obvious at AC Milan before he went back to Juventus and then got a little bit more cover thanks to Allegri. But at some stage, the Italians have to move on from Bonucci and Chiellini. Like, Mancini's gone back to playing a four from a three, which they obviously so famous for. And Bonucci and Chiellini have played nearly every minute in that four. And there are still some talented youngsters. I say youngsters, like Romagnoli is not really a youngster. I think he's 24 now at Milan.
He's definitely talented.
But probably time to start getting some serious minutes at the heart of an Italian defence, given that Chiellini is 35. So he'll be 36 when the Euros come around, and Bonucci will be 33. And Bonucci, his numbers are sliding. I think the lowest before this season, tackles and interceptions wise, he averaged during his career was like 2.6, something like that. And this season, it's like 0.5 tackles, 0.8 interceptions overall. And his general ability on the ball also seems to be sliding a little bit. Maybe that's because Maurizio Sarri doesn't want him on the ball as much. I'm not too sure, but so far this season, I think he's averaging 40 odd passes a game. And I mean, 17-18 at Juve was averaging 78. So like, I don't know whether that's because Sarri's decided he wants other players on the ball more. He doesn't want his centre backs on it, but that to me is trending downwards.
The ball, didn't he, under Sarri? So he still has one centre half that distributes it a lot, which you would have pinpointed as Bonucci. So.
Yeah, and Chiellini, despite his injury, he's still a very solid contributor in terms of numbers for Juve, and still outperforms Bonucci in terms of his numbers. But neither of them stack up to Romagnoli at Milan. Really, I think they are probably better players right now, because they're so used to playing with each other and in a certain system.
They're a better partnership.
They're a better partnership than they are individuals. Like, I think we saw that when Bonucci went to Milan, he really struggled when he didn't have Chiellini alongside him. And I think that at some stage, Italy have just got to go, right, we've got to bite the bullet and just move one of these boys on, or we've got to move them both on. I think Euro 2020 will be their last tournament. I mean, if Chiellini goes to the World Cup in 2022, he'll be 38, 39.
Jeez.
Which is just...
not unheard of for Italians.
Which is not unheard of for Italians, but surely at some stage the Italians have got to think, right, we need to be ready for 2022, and is Chiellini part of that readiness? I just don't think he is, like at 39 at that tournament. And the same can be said of Bonucci, will be 35 36 I think at that tournament. So
I'm trying to think of someone that Romagnoli could partner.
Well, there's Gianluca Mancini, right? Gianluca Mancini is a good
Regani
defender.
As well, if he ever gets a minute.
There's Armando Izzo, who is not young, but he's 27. Like, he's going to be fine at that tournament. So, Armando Izzo is probably one of the best centre-backs in Italy, and he doesn't really get... I don't even know if he's got a cap. He might do.
Yeah.
But Gianluca Mancini does.
I'm not sure. So he's been playing a back four of like Florenzi, Braghi, and obviously Bonucci, Chiellini. But I just think at some stage, somebody's got to bite the bullet and move one of these two on, because they've just been around forever, haven't they, as well? Like, it feels like they're so predictable, Italy, what they're going to do. Somebody's got to mix it up. And I don't think he'll be Mancini. He'll play these two at Euro 2020. But I think for the World Cup in particular, 2022... They should be phased out. Somebody please phase these two out.
Well, I mean, the failure to qualify for the first World Cup in 50-odd years was supposed to be that ground zero, wasn't
it? But it hasn't been, has it?
And the fact that they're still playing is maybe a little bit alarming. Obviously, there's, I don't know if it's unfair to say that there's more talent coming through on the other end of the pitch. Is Barella sort of a bit of a defensively minded midfielder? Is he in the squad, Nicolas Barella?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that Zaniolo, obviously?
Well, he's a box-to-box player.
Is Jorginho and Verratti kind of starting that?
Yeah, I'm really struggling to think of like a really outstanding... I have no clue about it, so...
And then going forward, it's like Chiesa is like the best
Torino
hope, isn't it?
Chiesa. Well, they've got Chiesa, they've got Pellegrini, they've got Zaniolo, you know, they've still got Verratti, they've got... Insigne's getting up there now, though, right? Insigne's 28, so he might not be at the World Cup even.
But like defensive players, that's quite rare to have that shallow a pool.
Especially in Italy, where they're
still pretty good, though, isn't it? Jorginho, Verratti,
Roman
that's kind of it, like out and out defensive midfielders.
Nah, well, centre half to me, I was kind of thinking.
They aren't very deep at the back, particularly in fullback areas.
Well, we think that though because we don't necessarily know.
No, yeah.
But for instance, like they might have, you know, they might have a bunch of guys in Italy who we haven't heard of who are the equivalent of like Tarkovsky or Dunk or something.
Yeah, they probably do.
Surely a couple of boys at Atalanta.
Well, Mancini came out of Atalanta, and he's 22, I think. So there are guys around. Plus, Luca Pellegrini will come in at left back in the long run. They've got Spinazzola, who is perfectly reliable as a left wing back. Like there are guys around.
Yeah, it's because you
can't see it right.
Yeah, you automatically think of the bigger clubs and Inter, Roma,
Gagliardini.
Yeah, Gagliardini's a sort of CDM, isn't it? Yeah.
I think
they'll get it sorted out, won't they?
They've got to go at some stage. I don't think it'll be the Euros, but I think maybe now's the time just to start phasing Bonucci, I think, of the two, even though he's the younger, out of the team a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a good shout. Interesting shout.
Okay, next one is, what is it? It's Wild Card.
Wild Boys.
Is this Wild Card to go, isn't it? Or Wild Card to start, whatever. Wild Card in general.
Yeah. Wild Card to go.
Generic meaning.
Who have you got, Pat?
I've got Harvey Barnes.
Mental.
You're a massive Barnes advocate, aren't you?
Yeah, and also, if Sterling gets injured, you have nobody to play off the left except Rashford. And Rashford, I think, should be a centre-forward. No. Rashford's going to play as a centre-forward this season most of the time. Like, yes, there'll be some interchange, like there always is, like the top clubs, especially with Martial there. But he's a nine now. That is what he is. And he's good at it. He's really good at it. He's not a particularly good creator. He's not an especially good passer. He's not a particularly good dribbler. But he is good at all those things for a centre forward. He's just not good at them as a left winger. And it's strange to me when I look at this current squad that there is space for Barkley, for Winks, for Trippier, which is crazy. I mean, until Wan-Bissaka's injury. That there was space for all those guys, but not for Harvey Barnes, who I think is a really exciting prospect.
I think that's because he doesn't start for Leicester all the time.
Yeah, I mean, and I was thinking about this the other day, that if Barnes goes through the rest of the season and at the end of it is still not a guaranteed starter for Leicester, and I were a big club, I would 100% try and buy him off them. Like, because if they're not going to play him regularly, like, he's good enough to be playing regularly. He's an excellent player. And the big sides are always in need of homegrown players. And more importantly, he's a homegrown player who looks like he could not just be a contributor, but be really, really, really good. I mean, like, last season, if you compare him, his numbers in the Premier League over the back half of last season to Mason Mount's in the Championship, they're superior. You know, like, they had the same shot quality, about 0.09 expected goals per shot. It's like a 1 in 11 chance of it going in. Mount took 2.7 shots. Barnes took 3.5 and was taking more inside the box. He creates 1.5 chances per game. This in the Prem. Completes 2.7 dribbles with a 61% success rate. Nice. Like, do you know what Wilf Zaha's dribble success rate was last season?
Shit.
51%.
Oh, okay, nice.
Like 51%. Like, and that's like, obviously that's... He dribbles a lot and people double up on him, but doubling up on him shouldn't actually affect those numbers. And 51% is like obviously not great. 61% is very good for a young player who really needs to fill out physically.
Didn't Barnes underperform his expected goals and assists when he returned as well? Like he should have had more. Yeah. Maybe if he had a little bit more to show for it, he might have staked to... been a bit unlucky in that regard. He might have staked a firmer claim for a first choice spot. Do you think Ayoze Perez is going to get those minutes that he should be getting if they go 4-3-3?
I worry that Ayoze Perez is going to play a lot because they spent so much money on him. Yeah. But I don't really understand it because Ayoze Perez isn't really better at anything than Harvey Barnes, like especially not in a 4-3-3. Mm. Like in a 4-3-3, there's no home for Ayoze Perez. Like he's a forward or a second striker who can pull out wide a bit. Mm. But he's not fast, he's not a great dribbler, and he's not a great creator. Barnes is all those things.
Do you think it's because he likes his defensive output? Like he's quite high intensity presser, Perez. Like I was watching Rodgers' press conference on the weekend when we were trying to find some videos for winners and losers, and he was like raving about Perez's off the ball work for like the Vardy goal in particular when he presses and then he gets the ball and Madison puts it over and Vardy scores.
But I think Barnes is young enough that Rodgers can just teach him to press. Like it's not going to be that difficult to say to him, press or you're not in the side. I mean, also I think Rodgers has started the season. He started the season extremely conservatively and he's getting less conservative now because I think he realises he can trust the players he's got. So he's playing Bournemouth the other day, you know, who are one of the better attacks they'll face this season. Bournemouth ripped through Man City the other week and were quite unlucky to lose, really. And yet he said he didn't play like Choudhury and Ndidi like he did in the first two games of the season. He said, we're going to trust Tielemans, Maddison and Ndidi as a three.
And in that game, it was Maddison, Tielemans and Vardy doing an awful lot of pressing. Like, all of those players are pretty useful in that regard. So it's not like Perez is the specialist presser in that team. And when has Jamie Vardy kind of ever been able to play with a striker off of him? Like, Okazaki played there, but then scored no goals as a result because he just had to be like doing all that defensive work behind him, like 10, 15 yards behind him. So I don't think Perez is going to get minutes as a second striker.
And that was in the holdover days as well of the 4-4-2, right? When it was like a 4-4-1-1, really. Like, once
Albrighton is an out and out left mid.
But once you're moving into a three-man midfield, you don't need that defensive forward role in quite the same way anymore because you've got an extra man in the middle of the park. And so I think that he's just somebody they need to invest more minutes in. Got a goal and two assists in 1,000 minutes on the back half of last season. XG suggested he should have had 6 goal involvements in 1,000 minutes.
Mm. And if he gets that, I think people would be a bit more bullish about him.
Yeah, and he only turned 21 in December. Mm. Better per 90 expected numbers than Aaron Ramsey, Christian Eriksen, Felipe Anderson. Way better than Iosi Perez, who cost 30 mil. So if Perez is 30 mil and he's, what, 5 years older than Barnes, and he's not homegrown, how much is Barnes worth realistically? It's going to come down to how much Leicester play him.
And Leicester drive a hard bargain as well, don't they? Particularly for homegrown talent to bigger clubs.
They absolutely do. But if they haven't played him that much this season and he really agitates for a move, I don't know what his contract looks like. I imagine it's quite long. But I don't know. It just seems like somebody they obviously should be investing time in because they're actually not terribly strong in the front line. Their front line is quite weak. They've got Vardy, then their backup forwards are Perez and Iheanacho, and then they've got Albrighton and Barnes, and do they still have Gizal? I don't even know.
I think he left the club on deadline day.
I mean, like, if...
Oh, and they've got that kid as well, Diabate. They've got Diabate
still
as
got
well.
Iheanacho as well, aren't they? I mean, if something happens to Vardy, that might be the only way he gets like meaningful minutes. If Perez moves into centre-forward, then he goes out to the right or something.
If Vardy got injured, I'd play Iheanacho as a centre-forward, and I'd play Barnes with him. Like, but it's just... I look at England's team and I think, if Sterling gets injured, the best option right now would be to play Mount there or play Rashford there. And I think both of those are inferior choices to playing Barnes there. Rashford maybe not in certain games, but I think Mount overall, I think Mount actually looks like an inferior player to Harvey Barnes at the moment.
Okay. I haven't seen enough of Harvey Barnes.
If Mount hadn't scored 2 goals this season, I don't think we'd be talking about him quite so seriously. And I think he was quite lucky to score 2 goals. He has 1 expected goal. He got 2 so far. Like, that's good. I think he'll score some goals this season because he's going to get, like you said, a ton of minutes. But I don't really see what I want to see from these players is see the evidence of like what they can actually do. Mm. And it seems like Barnes is a plus dribbler, a good shooter and a good creator at Premier League level at a very young age.
I agree. I just think because of his position, he probably won't go because Rashford can play there.
I think Mount probably looks like a better player. Do you know what I mean? He looks more like a footballer. He looks more technically adept. Harvey Barnes is still a little bit of like, he reminds me of James Forrest at Celtic, where it's a little bit kind of traditional or like old.
I haven't actually seen Harvey Barnes play.
In the way he's a bit of a gas player down the wing. But he's I mean, the numbers are bearing out that he's a very... very kind of deadly little player.
See, I just find Mount frustrating, though. That's my problem. Like, I like Mount. I like him, and he presses well. That's what I like about him. But he's so wasteful, and he needs to understand that he's not playing for Derby anymore. Like, it's no longer like, please pop one in from 20 yards.
Yeah.
It's like, when you're getting to 20 yards, you should be looking for the pass, and you only take the shot on if there's not a better option or if something really opens up. Mm. Like, right now, I think he's been lucky to score 2 goals. And I think that if he'd only got 1 or if he'd got none, both of which are perfectly possible, then we're not really talking about him. And don't worry. And don't get me wrong. We should be talking about him. But the idea that Mount would be, I think he probably is pretty much nailed on to go to the Euros.
Maybe if
there's Barnes, I think there's almost no chance he goes.
Maybe if there's a more of an established striker at Chelsea, then he wouldn't kind of be... maybe he's been tasked with just kind of shooting on sight because Tammy Abraham, I don't know.
I just think
no, because he did it at Derby as well. He's always done it.
I just think he's been Chelsea's best player.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I think Kovacic has been really good as well, but I think he's probably been Chelsea's best player. And I just think Harvey Barnes can't get a game for Leicester at the moment.
That's true. But I think in the long run, though, we will see...
Barnes has to get minutes.
But I also think in the long run, Chelsea would be better if Pulisic is their central player, not Mount.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably inevitable.
Yeah,
I just like Pulisic is clearly a much bigger talent than Mount,
and they just don't know where to play Pulisic, or if they he's not quite working off the left, so they're trying on the right. He's not quite working. I think they'll get it right eventually, but
They don't know if they want him as an off the ball runner or an on the ball dribbler or whatever. Yeah. Like, because he's played as both of those in Germany, he's done really well. So,
yeah, I think Højlund is a very good shout for his injuries. I just think he needs more minutes for Leicester.
It depends how it shakes out this season. If he gets 1500 minutes, he'll be in with a shout.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, we're talking of kind of outside shouts. I mean, Norway by no means are guaranteed qualification. But when I sort of went hunting around on Twitter for a young player that fit the wild card, the sort of definition of it, I actually went to ask Zach Lowry and he slid into his DMs and he was like, "You need to check out Erling Braut Haaland."
Alfinger Haaland's kid.
Alfinger Haaland's kid, who is an absolute yeti, by the way.
Yeah, massive
guy. He is huge.
He's already scored nine goals, isn't it?
He is, but he was born in Leeds and is a Leeds fan. So who knows, maybe if Leeds get promoted, we might see him gracing Elland Road. However, Manchester United were also scouting him last season and Juventus were as well. So I think Leeds will have to get in line. His physical development obviously just happened super early, which means he's been able to kind of hit the numbers he's been hitting, you know, far quicker than your average footballer. So he made his senior debut at 15 in the second division of Norwegian football. Clearly found it quite tough. 0 goals in 16 appearances. But then, like you said, he scored 9 in one game against Honduras at the Under-20 World Cup. I think after 5-0, they did go down to 10 men. He also scored a goal in that game that would have killed a horse had it hit it in the head. Quick. He should have got a ticket.
And it's really close in, is it?
It's about like 12, like maybe not. 8-ish sort of yards. But he has just got an absolute thwack on him. And it doesn't seem to be at the expense of anything else. Like, he looks a little bit unorthodox, but he's really good at kind of getting the ball out from underneath him, beating his man. He's got very decent acceleration. And he's sort of like Zlatan Ibrahimovic in that there's a lot of unorthodox finishes in there. A lot of unorthodox kind of touches and flicks and not so much tricks, but he's got the running power from wide as someone you kind of profile as a striker, kind of akin to Romelu Lukaku. You know, when you see Lukaku blast the fullback and the fullback just bounces off of him, it's kind of reminiscent of that. He's a decent presser too. I asked the other Bundesliga, which is another Twitter account, for some kind of like little nuggets on him. And he was just saying, like, short of me gathering you some raw data right now, you just have to trust my opinion that he's a very, very adept presser already. And that is the kind of profile of player that RB Leipzig, or the RB group in general, go after. And RB Salzburg actually signed him for $4.5 million after a very promising season at Molde, where he was taking 2.3 shots per 90, 1.4 of them inside the box.
So is he at Salzburg now?
Yeah, so Salzburg signed him and he's had an absolutely mental start to the season. But of course they are similar to PSG in that if you're a youngster, you could pad out your numbers big time there because they are so dominant. Won the league by 12 points last year. It's a much shorter season. Very similar to Scottish football. In fact, I think it is 12 teams and it is 6-6 towards the end of the campaign to make up the rest of the games.
Whose group did they get drawn in the Champions League? Salzburg. I think it's Chelsea's.
No, they're in Liverpool's, I think, with Napoli.
Yes, they are.
Salzburg and some poor bastards.
That'll be a good test.
So hopefully, we'll see some numbers from him in the Champions League.
Because they tore both Leipzig and you boys apart last season, didn't they? But that was Marco Rose.
Hugely impressive. Marco Rose has left, and RB Salzburg have shed like 4 or 5 really big talents, haven't they, in the last 18 months to RB Leipzig.
But they've got in the coach from the US, right? From New York Red Bulls. They've got in, what's he called, Jesse March?
And he was previously the assistant under. He was the assistant under Marco Rose.
Yeah, yeah. So he's like got good pedigree.
Yeah, so he basically is just taking the reins when Rose left.
I mean, at the time of Ryan, 8-6 with 2 assists. So it already feels like he's playing, you know,
at the right level.
Well, at a level kind of beneath him if he carries on this rate anyway.
Yeah.
Salzburg as a team is scoring 3.8 goals per game. So it is that's hard. Mental. It is hard to sound him out as an exceptional talent in the Austrian Bundesliga. But just watching him, there is something so unorthodox about him and like hugely appealing about him.
Yeah.
That if Norway, he got called up in August as well. He's prospered at all the kind of other age groups. He got called up in August for his first cap. But if they can sneak through, you know, qualification, which...
Is it just him and Ødegaard? Just, is that their only players?
What, in Norway?
Yeah.
I mean, if you asked me to name five Norwegian Josh players, King. I'd be done.
Oh, Josh King, yeah, it's a good shout. Josh King.
Any defenders?
Penalty taker.
Almost certainly there'll be some. I can't think of anyone at the back.
Anyway, it's neither here nor there, is it? But yeah, definitely check out Erling Braut Haaland. Like Pato says, son of the guy that Roy Keane crunched.
Also, as dominant as Augsburg are, players who come out of Austria and even Switzerland tend to do pretty well. Like, you look at guys who've come out of the Austrian Bundesliga in the last few years, and they've been pretty solid, like including guys like, I think people like Joel Linton and Mateus Cunha have come out of like Switzerland and Austria, plus obviously all the midfielders we've heard about. Be interesting to see how Dabur does at Sevilla Munoz this season.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, good pedigree. Like, if they're becoming a real go-to, aren't they, Salzburg? And you know, if you can get in there before Leipzig, great breeding ground for young talent. Yes, that's it.
All right, while we're on the RB group, let's touch on my wild card. I've gone for Ibrahima Konate.
Strong.
At Leipzig.
Strong shout.
Don't think he'll go, though. I mean, I was looking at the centre-back roster for France, and it is rather stacked. He stands a chance given the Laporte injury, although that's apparently not as serious as first feared, but then first feared was he's going to be out for the entire season. Not so easy. If it's just 6 months, it might well be lucky. So he's also not favoured, is he, by France, Laporte? Like, he's going to be his first cap. So I think if he goes, Laporte, he's done very well, given that he's injured and they ate him. But they've also but they've also got, let's not forget, like, Umtiti, don't know whether he's going to be fit for it. Questionable. Benjamin Pavard looks like he might well go. Longley will go. Varane will go. Kimpembe will go. Luca Hernandez will go.
Oh God, Kimpembe.
Can't
Upamecano might go.
Well, he's German. Upamecano, though, interestingly, I was thinking about Upamecano for this, and he hasn't played a minute under Nagelsmann, Upamecano. And I don't know if that's because he's been injured. I didn't have enough time to read into it. But he hasn't got a minute in the back three.
He only got 1,500 last year, right?
I think it was less than that. I think it was like 1,200. Yeah,
and Nagelsmann, he was out a lot with injury. Nagelsmann has not played him for a minute. It's been Mukiele, Konate as the deepest of the three, and then Willy Orban.
Yeah.
So whether or not there's a problem with Upamecano, I'm guessing he's been injured. That's the reason he hasn't gone. But I think they'll probably take five centre-backs, France.
Diallo as well.
Yeah, exactly. And Kimpembe will definitely be there. Varane will definitely be there. Longley will definitely be there. They love Pavard in France. So that leaves two or one space between the likes of Zouma, Umtiti, Laporte, Konate, Upamecano, Diallo.
Varane?
I said Varane.
Varane and Longley were your nailed on.
I think they'll probably be
and
the
Luca
stars.
Hernandez and Pavard will go. They'll go as fullbacks.
Yeah, as the fullbacks. Or it'll be Varane and Kimpembe as the starting.
I don't
two.
Think I'd take Kimpembe, you know. I'd take Konate over Kimpembe.
If Diallo plays as many minutes as it looks like he's going to, then Kimpembe might not go. But
Kimpembe's actually injured at the moment.
Oh, is that why Diallo's playing every minute? But either way,
I think Diallo probably will.
Ibrahima Konate, I think, should be in with a shout in here. Obviously, we've talked about him loads on shows before, so I won't go into him too much in detail, but he is a monster as well, standing at 6'3". Never been capped by the French national team. Obviously, he has played for the under-21s and extremely effectively. But he is being used in a different way by Nagelsmann. Because he was previously used as a right-back as well as a centre-back, wasn't he? He was putting up like 1.5 dribbles.
Was that Diallo
game
left
last season? Right. Whereas Nagelsmann's obviously told him, no, you're going to be the deepest of my defenders and you're just going to be athletically covering the fullback areas because his dribble numbers have dropped from 1.5 down to 0.2. His tackles have gone from 3.8 tackles and interceptions per game to 2, so nearly half there. But his passes still incredibly involved in the game. 60 passes per per 90 at a 94% accuracy rate so far this season.
Are they just seeing more of the ball with Nagelsmann in charge?
I think potentially they're seeing more of it, but he's definitely not as progressive. There were times where he was properly stepping out into midfield areas last season, and when he was at fullback, he was right up the pitch. So I think Nagelsmann's kind of just said, you're not going to be doing that in a back three. I don't want you stepping out. I want the back three to be fairly rigid, and then let the wing backs do that. I was looking at, could France play a back three? Is that a possibility, given that they're probably the weakest area for them is fullback, I think, in the entire squad? Obviously, Philon Mendy is strong, but then the right back option is, what, Pavard going to play there like he did at the World Cup?
Yeah.
So I think, could they play a back three and then just fuck off the fullbacks and say these back three are good enough that we're just going to play three at the back and then we're just going to go all out going forward? I don't think they'll do it.
That'd be fun. The back three in Kante, you'd be like, okay.
Yeah, it's not a Deschamps move, is it? But could you imagine they played something like Varane, Diallo and Konate, or Varane, Longley and Konate, or Luca Hernandez, Pavard and Varane? Like, could they do it with Kante fan for them? Yes, they probably could, and they probably score 5 goals a game, but it's not going to happen for, under Deschamps. But I still think Konate's in with an outside chance of getting in. Even if he goes as like a backup right back, which isn't beyond the realms of possibility, given that they're probably going to go with, I'd imagine, Pavard as the starting right back, and then Cazorla might go on the plane as cover for both.
Well, Pavard started the season as a right back for Bayern as well.
Yeah, and he obviously was there at the World Cup, wasn't he? But it's definitely France's weakest there at the fullback positions.
Yeah, because after that, it's like Dubois.
There's not a noticeable world-class fullback in that squad. And Philon Mendy may well become that at Real Madrid, and he'll probably start as the left back. Unless Luca Hernandez is opted for.
And there's Benjamin Mendy as well.
But yeah, is Benny Mendy ever going to go? I've kind of written him off.
Like
I've forgotten about Benny Mendy.
Left back is much stronger than right back, certainly, which bodes well for Konate.
It's a shame about Benny Mendy, but it's just like, what is he now?
Yeah, Diallo might be able to play left back as well, like he did at Dortmund, and then you've got one less competition for centre back.
But then you've got Mendy, you've still got Mendy and Hernandez like in that left back.
Yeah, I always forget about that. Luke Hernandez is like their chief left back.
Whereas I would definitely pay for Philon Mendy over Hernandez.
So I think if Konate goes, he'll be as a right back cover probably on paper.
Sure.
And then with the options to play as a centre back.
Though Mukiele could also take that place if he plays a lot.
Yeah, which he probably will. Either way, good decisions to have, and I think Konate will be right in contention when Leipzig battle for the title of the Bundesliga this season, which they probably will. Under Nagelsmann.
Oh my God.
How many goals are they scoring at the moment? Too many to count. Either way, yeah, take him. For me. Imagine England had that depth at centre-half. We've got Stones
and
Maguire.
And then people like Zagadou and Saliba coming through.
Yeah.
I just think you could literally deploy 3 first-class back fours.
Yeah. You could do any combination of those would be fine. Just like pick names out of a bag.
Yeah, you genuinely could. And that's Laporte never even capped, so... French ain't like him.
Talking of first-class, that was a first-class podcast, gentlemen. So guys, that's Extra Time for another week, and if you still haven't got your football fix, make sure you take advantage of our collaboration with The Athletic at www.theathletic.co.uk/Sunday Vibes, all lowercase remember. That'll get you access to some unbelievable journalism for 30 days free of charge and a whopping 50% off an annual subscription. And like we said, they've added some of our all-time favourite writers to their ranks this summer, so it comes with the Extra Time seal of approval. Bye for now.